Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
All right, I don't know about you, but recently I felt that I'm living in a Back to the Future moment. We're living in the 21st century, yet we're debating tariffs as if this was the 19th century. Now, the big news is the Trump administration plans to impose tariffs on roughly $60 billion of annual imports from China, which is equal to about 10% of all U.S. imports from China last year. Before that, there was the announcement of steel and aluminum tariffs, and of course, we're renegotiating the North American Free Trade Agreement. So what's going on? And more importantly, how will these measures affect workers in factories and other industries? I mean, to me, the key question is this. Will workers be better off with tariffs? If not, what policies would improve their job security and take-home pay? My guests are Sung Won Son. He teaches economics and directs the Institute of Global Economic Research at California State University, Channel Islands in Southern California. Now, many listeners may remember Sung Won Son from his years as chief economist at Wells Fargo. Welcome.
Hi, Chris. How are you? It's been a long time.
It has been a long time, and I'm glad to be talking to you again. Our other guest is Robert Scott. He is senior economist and director of trade and manufacturing policy research at the Economic Policy Institute in Washington, D.C. Thanks for joining us, Robert.
Well, thanks for having me.
So let me just give out the number first. What questions do you have about trade for Sung Won Son and Robert Scott? How do you think the tariffs, if they're imposed, will affect your business or your company or your job? Call us at 651-227-6000, toll free at 800-242-2828. And you could also tweet me at C Farrell in Econ. That's at C Farrell Econ. So, Dr. Son, we'll just start off with you. The Wall Street Journal reports that China and the U.S. are negotiating to improve U.S. access to Chinese markets, and this fits in with the muted response from China so far. So what is your reaction to the latest news?
You know, to me, everyone is for free trade. You are, I am, China is, and then President Trump is too. The issue to me is really unfair trade. You know, because of the unfair trade that being practiced by other countries, including China, we are experiencing some serious problems, and that is a main source of our trade difficulty. So, to me, the whole thing is about how to go about removing non-tariff barriers, making trade fairer rather than unfair as it is today. And so, to some extent, I'm hoping that what's happening right now will result in, you know, reduction of non-tariff barriers, and then as a result become a freer trade. And then that's, I think, hopefully we are going.
And so give us an example of what you mean by non-tariff barriers.
Well, you know, for example, Americans, we are good at following the book. So we sign a treaty, we do what the treaty, the book says. But that is not the case in many countries, China being a very good example. So let's say we decided to export something from 3M to China, and someone misspelled the name 3M rather than, let's say, 3N. And so that has to be corrected. Now, you might think that, you know, you can correct it in 20 seconds, right? Well,
right.
In China, it may take a lot more than that, sometimes months. And then so that's an example of unfair trade practices. You know, there are many more using administrative, you know, the paperwork process to slow down the imports. And then so these are some of the things that we need to dismantle.
So, Robert, how is the strategy working for you? I mean, how are you, you know, judging this latest news? Give us the context.
Well, I think the context is that really for probably 60 years or more, the United States has stood by and allowed other countries to practice different forms of managed trade and industrial policies that systematically cost us jobs and led to growing trade deficits. And over the last 20 years, those deficits cost us about 5 million jobs in manufacturing. And that had a significant negative impact, not just on those workers, but on all workers who had a similar skill set, essentially everybody who didn't have a college degree, and that's roughly two-thirds of the labor force does not have a college degree, and all of them suffered a downward pressure on their wages as a result of, in part, the growth of unfair trade.
But the concern is that if you're using tariffs at this time, at this point, that this raises the real risk that we'll see other countries raising tariffs on us. And, you know, there have been discussions where the European Union has said, you know, coincidentally, maybe we'll raise tariffs on bourbon, which happens to be in Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell's state, maybe Harley-Davidson motorcycles, which happens to be in Paul Ryan's state of Wisconsin. I mean, but there is this genuine fear that, okay, we're heading into a trade war, which President Trump says they're easy to win.
Well, I think we have to take this apart and look at the different kinds of trade restrictions we're talking about. The most recent announcement concerning the tariffs on China, I think, is very different from the earlier announcement about steel and aluminum. So let's take the most recent case, $60 billion in tariffs on China plus other trade restrictions, for example, limitations on purchases of companies here in the U.S. by Chinese investors. That's a targeted set of restrictions on a country, China, that exports four times as much to us as we import from them. So they are much, much more dependent on exports to the U.S. than we are on exports to China. Plus, much of what we export to China are raw materials used for making products that are later re-exported. So really, all of the leverage is on the side of the United States in this. China can threaten, but it doesn't really have much to back up those threats.
So, but one of my concerns, and I'll toss this to you, Dr. Sun, one of my concerns here is the aluminum tariffs, the steel tariffs, caused a lot of upset. And if you're dealing with China and dealing with trade policy, it seems to me you want to have allies, not alienated allies, when you're having that kind of fundamental discussion about the rules of international trade.
Yes, I assume aluminum and then steel, that was in part based on campaign promises President Trump made, and that's one of the reasons why he decided to do that. I assume that was the case. And then when he talked about invoking national security, that was really not the reason for imposing aluminum and then steel tariff. Again, you know, these are not countries, Canada, Mexico, South Korea, these are not the countries which practice unfair trade practices. And again, the crux of the problem really is China. You know, what do we do with China? The problem is we don't have a whole lot of really, you know, good options. You know, we can talk about tit for tat, from soybeans to aircraft and et cetera. But China has a lot of leverage. Not only can they slap additional tariff on our goods, but also financially. China owns over $1 trillion of U.S. Treasury securities. And then every month, every year, they buy, you know, a lot of U.S. financial assets. If tomorrow morning or this morning China says, we are stopped buying U.S. Treasury securities, I can assure you our interest rates will, jump, even maybe skyrocket over time. As a result, our mortgage rates will go up significantly, and then our financial markets will gyrate. And then so this is the kind of power, the leverage they have as a result of where we are.
So, Robert, in an article that you wrote, it was a brief article that you wrote praising the move toward the steel and aluminum tariffs. You wrote, now that the tariffs have been announced, the United States should work with other nations to develop coordinated responses to unfair trade in these products. And my issue is they're not allies now. They don't trust us. They're saying what's going on. There are concerns about a trade war. It seems like, and particularly if we're dealing with China, it seems that you want to have a coordinated response to enforce the global rules of trade rather than get everybody's blood pressure higher.
I think you're right. I think that if we go back, the Commerce Department conducted an investigation of trade in steel and aluminum over the past year. They issued a report in January, and they gave Trump a set of three options. I thought the most appropriate one was to impose relatively high tariffs on countries that are unfair traders, such as China and South Korea, which, by the way, is one of the most frequently hit countries in unfair trade cases, as well as Vietnam and Russia and a group of other countries, so a dozen in total. He suggested high tariffs on those countries and low tariffs or quotas on other countries, which I think would have focused the targets much more directly on these unfair traders. I think that would have been a much more effective remedy. And in work that I published, I suggested he should, if he wants to negotiate with these other countries, a more effective approach would have been to say, well, we'll impose these tariffs unless you go along with us and circle the wagons against the unfair traders, put up tariffs like we're putting up on imports from China, South Korea, and other countries.
But one of the things that also troubles me is the standard that was used is national security. And It seems to me when you use national security, you know, anything comes under national security. So all you're basically saying to lobbyists is it's open season to declare that you're a national security interest. And then you're going to get an exemption. But if, you know what, you don't have good lobbyists, we don't like your lobbyists, we don't like your industry, you're not going to be at the table.
I think this illustrates the problem with going after unfair trade on a case-by-case, industry-by-industry basis. I think you're highlighting a key issue here. We have a $375 billion trade deficit with China. China has huge trade surpluses, not just with the U.S., but with the whole world. The same is true for Japan. Same is true for Germany. Those are the countries we ought to be going after. And the best way to go after them is to shift the discussion to a much higher level economically and start talking about rebalancing exchange rates. This is what we have done in the past when we developed large global trade imbalances. Last time was in 1985 when we put in place what's known as the Plaza Accord, which was an agreement with Japan and Germany and others to lower the value of the U.S. dollar and raise the value of those currencies, which made U.S. goods of all kinds more competitive on world markets. So that, I think, was a much more effective strategy.
And so, Dr. Sundar, you know, when we're dealing with the tariffs with China and steel and aluminum, are we kind of dealing with, you know, issues of the past and we're not spending enough time about intellectual private property, internet privacy, you know, some of the issues that are, you know, coming to the fore as our economy is developing?
Yes, I think that is right. We have to worry about existing trade deficits, but also even more serious, China has been taking our intellectual property for giving access to the Chinese market. And President Trump, I think, has correctly pointed out that we need to stop that. And then also, you know, the internet access, for example, you know, Facebook and Google cannot operate freely in China. We need to, you know, correct that as well, because going forward, these are probably more important than steel and then aluminum, which is diminishing in importance. So that was one of the problems with the WTO. WTO is
World Trade Organization.
WTO, the World Trade Organization, was essentially structured to deal with, goods and then maybe some services. But when it comes to intellectual property, that was not well constructed to deal with it. So I think we may need a new world trade order dealing with, intellectual property and then internet properties.
So let me just give out the number again. You know, what insights do you have into trade with China, steel and aluminum? Or do you think that, you know, these policies with China and on steel and aluminum will benefit you or your company? Call us at 651-227-6000 or toll free at 800-242-2828. Now, Robert, I don't need to tell you these numbers, but I'll tell it to our radio audience. You know, you've seen the figures. There are some, 140,000 workers in the steel industry. There are 6.5 million workers in industries that use steel to make their products. So how do tariffs benefit the workers?
Well, there have been studies of this, and in fact, I published one last week. There was one previously published study by two other authors, Francois and Bauman, who work with a group called Trade Partnership. They claim there'd be a net loss of 160-some thousand jobs, but they use very extreme assumptions about, which is essentially assumed that anybody laid off would not go looking for or find another job elsewhere. We're in a very low unemployment economy. If you make a more realistic assumptions about the labor markets, we estimated that the net losses would be only about 5,000 jobs. But again, this is a second best policy. It would not be the best solution to our global trade imbalances, but it does go after unfair trade in two core industries. Steel and aluminum are used to make a wide array of high value added, what's so-called durable goods, cars, auto parts, aircraft, windmills. And China's excess capacity and very low price, subsidized prices for these commodities is really affecting their competitiveness in all of these industries. So
right.
Addressing this problem, I think, is key to rebalancing trade with China and other unfair traders.
Well, my memory may be failing me, but I do remember looking at some economic studies when the Bush administration put on steel tariffs. And what basically you see is that senior executives, shareholders, and lobbyists, they pocketed the money. The money didn't go to the workers. They didn't see it in higher wages. They didn't even really see it in much more increased job security because there wasn't that much investment that went on into the steel plants itself. So I understand how senior executives would like this, but how does the worker on the assembly line get a benefit?
Well, I think you're talking about the steel tariffs in 2002 that were
That's
imposed
right.
by President Bush. And at that time, the steel industry in the United States was in complete collapse. 33 companies were in bankruptcy. And what they did was use the tariffs on a very temporary basis. I think it lasted for about 18 months. Reorganize the domestic steel industry and bring many of those companies out of bankruptcy. So while it did not create a lot of jobs in the steel industry, it prevented a lot of workers from losing their jobs. The time and the resources were also used to stabilize pension and the health insurance funds for retirees. So steel workers did get a lot of benefits out of that. But I agree with you. Steel tariffs will raise prices, and that will raise profits for steel companies. But that is part of the purpose. These companies were pushed into bankruptcy because low prices made it impossible for them to earn a decent rate of return. That's why there was low investment in the industry.
So I think let me just give you one more example about I was reading about a company which makes the ceiling fans. Of course, they make they use steel, and they're barely making it right now. And the price of a steel went up because of the tariff. And this company said that they're going to be out of business. Of course, jobs would be lost. During the Obama administration, President Obama levied the tariffs on Chinese tires. And to make long story short, Peterson Institute in Washington, D.C. Did a study. In a nutshell, they said that each job we protected in the tire industry cost pretty close to $1 million per job per year. You know, that's a lot of money. So in this case, we can talk about steel or aluminum or even tire. But at the same time, if we look at the other side of the coin, cost is pretty high. And so we really need to balance the two.
So what would you like to see, Dr. Sun? What do you think would benefit the worker?
Well, I am for free trade. So I think, President Trump is doing, trying to force or persuade China and some of the other countries to lower trade barriers, I think that does make sense. But at the end of the day, if we have a tit for tat and then go to a trade war, we are all going to lose. We are going to be worse off. Our trade partners are going to be worse off. And of course, that's all related to national security. So I think we need to, try harder, trying to bring down unfair trade practices. And if we do that, we will make progress. For example, I just heard that the United States and South Korea, they apparently have come to an agreement correcting some deficiencies in the CORUS or the Korean-U.S. Free Trade Agreement. Now, I haven't seen the details, but if we had not done anything, probably the trade deficit would have continued. And I'm hoping that as a result of the new agreement, which I have not seen, in the future going forward, our trade deficits with South Korea will come down. Essentially, I'm hoping that South Korea will buy more.
goods and services from the United States. So rather than decreasing trade, that we are increasing trade, I'm hoping that is really the case. And that's a win-win situation.
So following on with the South Korea agreement, which you're right, the details have not been published yet, or at least I'm not aware of where are the details. I haven't read them, but there is this agreement. So should everyone calm down? I mean, basically, is this working?
Well, I think what President Trump is trying to do, I think it's good. Again, I'm not for, again, you know, I'm an economist. I'm for free trade. I'm against, tariffs and then unfair trade practices. But what I'm saying is that the reality is that United States has a great deal of problem with trade deficits. In fact, one of the speeches I gave, I talked about free trade, and then almost everyone said, I am for free trade. And then so I said, last year we had a trade deficit with China of about $375 billion. And then China has bought many American properties, including Hollywood studios and W hotels, and then, the AMC movie chains, and the list goes on and on and on. So if you carry this to an extreme, you and I are okay, but our grandchildren, they might be working for the Chinese. Is that okay? And a lot of people who were for free trade, they said, no, that is not okay. I don't want my children, grandchildren working for the Chinese. And then so, if you, carry this to an extreme, that's what could happen.
So, Robert, I'm curious. I believe there's a strand of thinking in economics, and get your reaction to it, which is said, look, instead of doing tariffs, and you want to help the workers, let's take 25,000, 50,000, divide by the number of workers in the steel industry, 140,000, mm-hmm. and you make some sort of calculations about profit, which you can do. And so it comes to 50,000 every worker, give them a voucher, let them do with it what they want. Do they want to get some training? Do they want to get some re-education? Do they want to relocate? And that's directly benefiting the worker on the assembly line without putting up the trade barriers. Does that idea, is it flawed? Is there something to it?
I think it's not rooted in an understanding of the broad effects of trade on the lives and incomes of working people. Trade doesn't just affect this relatively small number of people displaced in manufacturing. As I said, we've lost 5 million jobs over 20 million years. We have an economy of 150 million jobs. What trade has done is repress the wages of all non-college educated workers, about 100 million workers in total. And the wage loss amounts to about $2,000 per worker per year. You do the math, it's about $200 billion a year of lost income. So this is not pocket change. It's a significant amount of money. One of the alternatives that has been promoted is to really beef up the safety net, job training,
retraining,
technical training for young people coming out of high school, apprenticeships and so on, and job creation, so that we can really run a high-powered economy that generates good jobs with rising wages for everybody, especially those who don't have a college degree. That is one way to go, but it's very expensive. It would probably cost us in something in the neighborhood of a couple of $100 billion a year or more. And this is what they do in Germany and in Denmark, the Nordic countries, Sweden, and they do not have the broad opposition to free trade that we see growing in the United States. So that is an answer, but it would not come on the cheap.
And then, on the wage compression, so the counter argument is that, yes, there's been wage compression, but there's been, relatively little inflation. Inflation has been falling for a long period of time. And so on a purchasing power basis, the worker is not doing as bad as it appears using the calculation you just did.
Well, the calculation I just did was in real dollars. So this is an inflation-adjusted measure which takes into account the benefits of lower prices for imports. I think there's not a widespread understanding of just how pernicious the effect of trade has been. This reflects what's well-known in economics, which is that that the increases in trade, lowering trade barriers, does generate benefits for the economy, but it also has a much larger redistributive effect. Most of the benefits flow to those at the top, to owners of factories and intellectual property, whereas most of the costs fall on working people without college degrees. And the negative impacts are actually much larger in scale than the net gains.
So are you concerned or excited about how tariffs might affect your job or your company? What do you want to understand about tariffs? Give us a call at 651-227-6000. Toll free, 800-242-2828. Dr. Sloan, how do you feel about this discussion that's been going on? You know, you read in the Financial Times, the Wall Street Journal, that the so-called international trade architecture that's been developed over the past 70 or so years, that it's unraveling, that this is a true threat to that. Hyperbole? Is there something there?
Well, I think it's unfortunate. Multi-level trade regime. We went from Doha round to Geneva to Doha round, and then to
these are the various world trade negotiations.
Yeah, exactly. And then President Trump wants to go to bilateral more than multilateral. I think the multilateral is more beneficial because you can solve many problems all at once, and then also at the same time you can get the cooperation of other countries as well. And so I like to see more multilateral rather than just a bilateral trade agreements. But of course, that is not easy to do, and we will have to see whether the Trump administration can succeed in their approach using bilateral as opposed to multilateral trade agreements. But I want to make one point your speaker made earlier. That is, all economists agree that when you have a trade of any kind, especially free trade, there are winners and losers. And then it is absolutely correct that there are losers, and many of those losers are people at the low end of the income spectrum. So then the question is, what do you do? How do you help them? The economic theory says we have to take some of the benefits from the free trade and then give it to the people who are losing in terms of education and training. How well have we done that in America? If you look at the data, we have spent annually less than 0.2% of our GDP in education and training related to trade, and that is grossly inadequate. If you look at some of the countries, especially in Europe, they are spending far more. So I think that's one of the things that we need to do. We need to take a much bigger share of our GDP and then devote it to education and training, especially for those people who have been adversely affected by trade.
I couldn't agree more, but I want to go to Roger from South Dakota. Roger?
Hey, Chris. Thanks for the show, and thanks for the guest's knowledge. I'm curious where the tariff money goes. I assume Treasury, and who gets to decide how it's spent? I assume Congress?
Roger?
Question mark?
I mean, Robert?
Yeah.
Yeah, the funds, it's a relatively small amount of money. A few billion dollars, as you may have heard, we're going to have a government budget deficit of approaching $1 trillion.
Yes,
this
we've
year.
Heard this.
Yeah, so it really is pocket change in the context of government spending. But the money goes into the general fund of the government and is used to cover some of those deficits.
All right, now let's go to James in St. Paul. James?
Hi, I guess I wanted to throw in another possible factor and effect of the trade is it seems to me that the baby boom generation is really at the very end of its ability to work and has never really been able as a group to save sufficient amount of money to cover their retirement. And their children have never experienced a period of time prosperity where they are the beneficiaries of that prosperity. So they don't have any way to be the traditional safety net. And we don't hear any talk about how we're going to deal with that gigantic generational bill that's about to come due in a few years.
All right. So, Dr. Sun, any thoughts?
Well, that is a problem. But on the other hand, if you look at our national net worth, the data from the flow of funds at the Federal Reserve, it shows that our net worth is at the record level.
And the problem is the distribution. Even though nation as a whole, we are wealthy, we are better off than we were ever before, distribution has been poor, so that the richer get poor, richer get the richer, and then the poorer get poorer. To some extent, that's what's happening. So, you know, distribution seems to be a problem. When you have a distribution problem like that, I guess, you know, you have two approaches. One is the Reagan approach, a trickle-down approach, and then to some extent, you know, President Trump is trying to use that. Or the other approach is the Obama approach, which is trying to distribute more. And, you know, during the Obama administration, we did quite a bit of that. So, you know, under the Trump administration, again, we are going to be using to make sure that economy grows as a result. Everyone benefits as we did during the Reagan administration. So those are really the kind of two approaches. But nation as a whole, you know, we are actually today better off than we have ever been.
Robert, any reaction to the question from James?
Well, I think that averages can hide a lot of sins, and that is the problem we have here. As Dr. Stone has pointed out, the country as a whole is doing well, but the distribution of income has worsened dramatically. So most workers are worse off. They don't have enough income to save. I think there are two ways, actually, to address that. The problem of distribution. One is to try and help people out and transfer income to the elderly, to people, workers on the who don't have good jobs with good wages, and to try and make them whole. The other is to try to generate what I would call a high growth, high pressure economy. Which tends to create good jobs with rising wages for everybody. And I think that will tilt the distribution of income back in favor of working people. The United States over the post-war period, the first half of the post-war period through the 1970s, saw income growth that was broadly shared throughout all workers, rich and poor, in the economy. Only since the mid-70s have we seen this very skewed income distribution, where workers in the bottom half or two-thirds got essentially no wage gains, and all of the gains went to people in the top 10 or 20% of the income distribution. We can reverse that by creating more good jobs at the bottom.
And Dr. Sun, there's a last question. One of the things we heard a lot during the Obama administration, you'd raise the Obama administration, that business hates uncertainty. Okay. Business doesn't even know what the steel and tariffs policy is right now. Aren't we dealing with a lot of uncertainty?
Yes, I think there's a tremendous amount of uncertainties, certainly a lot of economic uncertainties, and as a result of this trade issue, uncertainty has gone up. And, you know, that is a major issue. We have, you know, geopolitical uncertainties, and many businesses operate internationally. And to them, of course, economics is important, the bottom line, but also a geopolitical situation that is very important as well, from the Middle East to, you know, North Korea. And then so, I mean, you know, I've been in this business for a long time, but I can't remember this much uncertainty facing businesses today. So it is a very, very difficult environment. So even though businesses are doing well, generating good bottom lines, I think we have an unprecedented level of uncertainties.
Well, thank you, because the one thing I am certain that we're ending our show at this point, and I'd like to thank you very much. My guests have been Sungwon Son, director at the Institute of Global Economic Research at California State University, Channel Islands. Robert Scott is senior economist at the Economic Policy Institute. I'm Chris Farrell.